You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, Sixers fans, welcome to a new episode of Sixers Daily. I'm your host, Jazz Kang. Before we jump into things, don't forget, as always, a reminder, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us anywhere you get your fix, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it, we are there. And of course, check us out at libertyballers.com. It's almost the end of July, and we still have so much NBA news coming out, which again is weird because we don't see this all the time. But it's good for people like us who cover the league and have things to talk about. So coming up later on in the podcast, after the break, I'll be joined by Adam Taylor of Celtics Blog. He's giving his insight into what happened with KD, what could potentially happen with Jaylen Brown, and how that whole thing could go out. Obviously, Woj and Shams reporting that the Celtics have now become a suitor for Kevin Durant. But before he hops on with me, joining me, usually does once a week, Mr. Paul Hudrick. Paul, first off, you had a wedding this weekend that you had to attend to. You left the little guy. Miles was on his own for the first time. How did you feel as a papa, and how'd you feel with your lady going out and having to leave the little fella at home for the first time?
Well, first of all, as everyone in this area knows, it was 95 degrees here on Saturday, and so wearing a suit was not great. And then also, my hair is pretty long nowadays, and I didn't want to go full man bun. It's a wedding. I wanted to look nice, so I left it down. I'm like, that was also a pretty big mistake, but the little guy was with his grandmom, and you know, he had some struggles, but he got through it. And and me and my fiance got through it. It's a weird experience, as I'm sure any parent can attest. It's very weird. It's not, we've left him alone, but as far as like, he was left alone, like she put him to bed, that's the first time anyone other than us has put him to bed at night, which is wild that he's 7 months old and that hasn't happened yet, but actually 8 months as of today. But we got through it. That's the best way to put it.
Well, I'm glad you did, and you were able to survive. But we do, Paul, maybe you want to go with the short hair anytime soon? You like it long like that?
You know what it is? It's, I know as soon as I do it, I'm going to be so upset and I'm going to regret it that I'm just so afraid to do it. Because I've thought about it many, 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 many times. My fiance Carrie has threatened several times to shave my head in my sleep. And if anyone who knows her, she is the type of person who would make good on a threat like that. So if it is short, there's a chance that she just took a snippet out and then I just had to go and get it cut. But no, we'll see, man. I mean, maybe I just might. If I made it through this heat wave in Philly this past week, I think I'm pretty good. I think I might be smooth sailing. So I might just ride it out.
Well, and I think, you know, Paul, that those are the three biggest storylines of the rest of the NBA offseason. What happens to Kevin Durant, Donovan Mitchell, and what happens to Mr. Paul's hair, right? That's going to be something we're going to keep eyes on. But let's jump into some Sixers talk. Looking at, obviously, we know that the depth of this team is much improved, right? We've talked about it a lot on the podcast. You've written about it on the website, as of our other contributors at Liberty Ballers, but you're adding PJ Tucker, adding DeAnthony Melton, adding Daniel House. James Harden, actually, from the pictures I've seen of him lately in the offseason, looking a lot leaner than he did during his time in Philly towards the end of the season, and obviously with Brooklyn at the beginning of the regular season last year. But looking at this now, and Jackson Frank did a great job writing this up. You should definitely check it out at Liberty Ballers. It's titled How the Sixers Greatly Improved Their Defensive Versatility This Offseason. And we mentioned those three guys in terms of Tucker, House, and Melton, guys who can all shoot the rock. Guys can defend multiple positions, very good defensive players. When you look at the options that Doc Rivers is going to have this year, how much better do you think the Sixers are going to be defensively? Obviously, we saw them struggle, like Joel Embiid, if not the best, one of the best rim protecting bigs in the league overall, but obviously losing Ben Simmons in that deal, not having him around for most of the regular season before the trade, that hurt the Sixers defense overall. And again, guys like Seth Curry, Tyrese Maxey, James Harden, nobody's going to ever mistake those guys for all first team, all NBA defense type guys. But when you look at this now, like, Where do you think this is going to help the Sixers the most, Paul, going into next season in terms of the defensive versatility?
Well, first of all, I am going to give myself a pat on the back because I think what a good manager does is they find people who are smarter than them and know more about certain things than them. And that's where Jackson Frank comes in, because he did a really great job in that article and kind of breaking it down. The one thing he said, which I think was totally fair, as I'm sorry, there's a severe thunderstorm in the background, so I apologize to anyone who picks up any of that. But yeah, what Jackson kind of went into is it's not just a black and white. These guys are good defensively. It's that they're also really versatile defensively, and what that can do for the Sixers and what that can lead to for their scheme. James Harden, as you mentioned, we all know that's well documented, not a good defender. And he switches everything because he's not good at fighting through screens. It's just not what he does. So when he's playing, you kind of have to be switch heavy. And the Sixers couldn't be that last year because they didn't have the personnel. Respectfully, I think Tyrese Maxey has a chance to be a pretty good defender at some point down the road. And you see flashes of it, but he's not there yet. Maybe this year you see a little bit of an uptick there. And I think that's kind of the part of his game that really you want to see a jump. And I think he's got the chops to do it. I think he could be a very good two-way guard in this league. But, you know, when you had him out there, when you had, you know, Danny Green, who, again, a solid defender, but maybe just not that guy where he can just switch, you know, 1-3, 1-4 anymore. Tobias Harris showed at the end of the year he got much better in that regard. But also, again, not great fighting through screens, so you kind of have to switch stuff. So that leads me to when you have a guy like a Tucker who can legitimately, I mean, he could guard 1-5 on certain nights against certain teams. He's that good, that versatile, that tough. You know, a guy like Melton could guard 1-3, depending on the matchup with that 6'8 wingspan, he can guard up a little bit. House, some nights maybe might be able to guard some ones, and he can guard up to fours on certain nights. So to add three guys that have that kind of versatility, like not only are they just good defenders, they're very versatile defenders. And that's just going to open up so many things. They can do so many more things defensively. Joel Embiid probably doesn't get enough credit for it because, as you mentioned, a great rim protector. But we saw in the playoffs, like, he got switched on the Tyler Hero, forced a turnover. Got switched on the Victor Oladipo, forced him into a bad turnover and a bad shot. Like, he is a better – it's not something you want to live with, obviously. And because he is such a good rim protector, you don't want him switching out on the perimeter for everything. But – you know, his ability to do that opens things up. And then, you know, with the improvements of Maxey, with even, you know, Matisse Thybulle, who's now looking more and more like this team's 10th man. It's another guy, say what you want about him on the offensive end, but very good fighting through screens and can switch 1-3. So the more of those guys you add, it just makes you that much better on that end of the floor. And again, not only better, but versatile. Versatile is the big word. And I think that's the thing that Jackson focused on. Guys that can fight through screens, guys that can guard multiple positions. And they were just so slow and plodding last year. And it showed up big time on the defensive end of the floor. They're so much more athletic. They have, you know, all three guys have such high motors, which we've talked about a ton throughout this offseason. And I think that's going to be huge as well. But yeah, Dan Burke, who's kind of the de facto defensive coordinator for this team, he's just going to have so many more options with how he can implement his schemes. And then also Doc Rivers is going to have so many more options with lineups, you know, can mess around with some PJ Tucker at the five, do a lot of different things. And it's just going to make this team a lot more formidable and a lot more tougher to match up against on the defensive end of the floor.
You know, what's funny. It's like you mentioned that how slow and plodding they were. They were like a 90s team at some point. You know what I mean? Last season, like, we saw Draymond Green tweet about this too, about comparing how the 2017 Warriors would have beat the Bulls and the Jazz. And it's like, well, that's what the Sixers look like at points last season.
You know, well, I loved KD's tweet. Did you see KD's response to that?
Yeah.
He said that's Steve Kerr would have told us to just run pick and rolls against Steve Kerr all game long.
That was a good one. That was actually a great one. That was a great tweet. That was a phenomenal. Great tweet. Yeah, because, and he's probably right. Steve Kerr would probably look at himself and be like, dude, just go ahead and attack that little fellow right there all the time. So I think he'd be okay saying that. One thing I wanted to ask you too, Paul, how worried are you about PJ Tucker? In terms of, we know, like, I love PJ Tucker's game, so I'm not going to say that I'm worried about him not, you know what I mean, at least holding his own or at least giving it his all in terms of effort. But he's already 37 years old, turned 37 in May. He'll be 38 next year, you know, hopefully, but the Sixers are in a midst of a playoff run at that point. But just in terms of what he brings in terms of his energy, his offensive output, the Heat, you know, in the games that he played last season, did have a better net rating. There were 2.7 points better per 100 possessions with Tucker on the court. But when you look at him, are you worried at all that his game is going to age badly? Because again, not often you see 37, 38, 39 year olds really being significant contributors very often in this day and age in the NBA.
I'm not worried about it this year, really at all, because he was so good last year and he was so good for the Heat in the playoffs. He was really good for the Bucks the year before that. And I think his career in a weird way has almost saved him. Like, you know, all those years he spent overseas, or, you know, he didn't play like the arduous NBA schedule that they play over here. And it was a little bit different. And he's clearly a guy who takes care of himself, takes care of his body, and stays in really good shape. But I hear what you're saying about, like, you know, this is a guy who is max effort, who, like I touched on, plays 100 miles an hour every single night and gives his all. And at what point, you know, you're 37 years old, at what point does that start not becoming a thing? Like, where can that start to fade? And I think it raises an even bigger question to me. And I know Dave Early has been really curious about this too, is, you know, James Harden has led the league in games played. He's led the league in minutes. At certain points in his career, he played a ton last year for the Sixers. At what point is it this offseason? Is it this season? I hope it is, that he kind of looks at it and says, okay, like, I don't have to play 82 games. I don't have to play 35 minutes a night during the regular season. Let's save my best basketball for when the time comes. And I think the same goes for Tucker. The same goes for Joel Embiid. Really, the only guy, I would say Maxey and Tobias Harris are the only two guys it doesn't go for, because Tobias Harris has been one of the most durable players in the NBA, and Tyrese Maxey is 21 years old. And I don't know if he ever even gets tired with the way that kid works.
He does
and
not. How hard he I can confirm he does not, Paul. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so I think otherwise, you know, you're looking at guys that'll be fine. Don't really have to load manage them. But I think Tucker's a guy, along with Embiid and James Harden, that I'm hoping, and I'm curious to see how they sort of handled them during the regular season. James Harden even talked about that too. You know, in that one interview, he said, I have to make sure I'm peaking at the right time. Like, I can't ramp up my offseason workouts too much because I need to have it for when the season starts. And then I need to take it for, you know, another level even more when the playoffs start. And you wonder too, Jess, and this isn't, I'm not making excuses for James Harden. Like, his playoff struggles are his playoff struggles. They're a reality. They're there. And there's a reason they're there. But I do wonder if him playing all those big minutes, carrying a team on his back, taking a ton of shots, playing all 82 games, like, maybe that's part of the reason that he gets to the playoffs and he just doesn't have it. Like, not LeBron James is a freak of nature. He could play 82 games and average 35 minutes and then be great in the playoffs because he is a medical marvel. It doesn't make sense what he does. But not everybody's like that. So maybe James Harden just needed to kind of take a look at himself and say, like, all right, I'm 33 and, like, my body's not going to do the stuff it could do when I was 23. And maybe this is the time now where I take some games off and I play a little bit less minutes. And I think Joel Embiid too, I get it, you know, with the MVP stuff, and he really wanted to be in those conversations, and him not playing as much was the reason really 2 years ago why he lost it to Jokic. And I think we're at a point now where he realizes, like, all right, I don't care. I tried the MVP thing for like 2 years and I didn't get it. And now it's like, all right, let's just go win the damn thing. And I think Tucker is a team first guy. And I think if the team comes to him and says, look, like, we have this plan for you, we think it's what's best. Like, you know, this is the sports science. This is what it suggests. And this is how we think you should handle yourself at your age 37 season. I don't see him giving much pushback. I think he'll go along with it. So I'm very curious to see how they handle all three of those guys. And it's so not important, the record at the end of the season. What's so, like, if they're the three seed, but James Harden, Joel Embiid, and PJ Tucker are at top form, you know, once game one is played, that's what matters much more than anything that happens during the regular season.
Oh, and I'm with you on that too. And I think that's where, you know, we talked about obviously the defensive versatility that guys like House, guys like Melton, guys like PJ Tucker are going to bring to the team. The depth, man, I think that's going to be so huge that, like you mentioned, these guys aren't going to have to, if they want to take a rest night, you know, you're playing maybe a lesser team, you want to take a day off to get some breaks, and you're going to be able to do that and not worry that your team is going to fall off a cliff, right? Whereas last year, we know if Embiid was out of the lineup, good luck. You know what I mean? To the Sixers. Yeah, they played hard, especially early in the season where Doc had them going against some stiff competition. But we knew that they were done. Whereas this year, it's like, okay, even if Joel decides to sit, obviously that's a huge loss, or it's going to be detrimental to the team that particular night. But also, you're confident in the guys you have around them. And I think that is the first time in a while for the Sixers that we're going to see that kind of depth. Looking around the rest of the NBA, Paul, you mentioned now the regular season. Okay, we don't really know what, you know, we don't care, because this team is not going to be judged by going 65-17 in the regular season, right? It's all about the playoffs, and it's about getting to the and winning the NBA Finals. And I think that even if they go 47-35 and finish as a six seed, nobody's going to care, right? It's all going to be dependent on what happens in that during that playoff run next year. But they're going to be dealing with some very good teams around them. We know the Milwaukee Bucks with Chris Middleton back in the lineup, obviously with Giannis, arguably the best player in the NBA, depending on where you sit on that issue. You also have Jrue Holiday. They got a very, very good team. We know the Bucks are going to be there, but late last night, early this morning, again, depending on where you are, we ended up getting a tweet notification from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN telling us that the Boston Celtics are a very serious suitor for Kevin Durant, one of the top 10 players of all time. Where did you sit on that? Like, how scared would you be if the Celtics got Kevin Durant, although looking like they'd have to give up Jaylen Brown, potentially giving up another talented guy like Marcus Smart? Like, where would you sit on that, Paul, if KD does end up in Boston?
Oh, it'd be terrifying. If you're the Sixers, that's terrifying. They just went to the finals, and they're going to get one of the greatest basketball players of all time. So, I mean, it's a risk. Like you mentioned, you know, giving up Jaylen Brown, who already, you know, judging by his latest tweet, is not thrilled by that, you know, his hearing his name after he had such a great year for them and helped get them to the finals. I'm sure he did not love seeing his name swirling out there, but it's Kevin Durant. After all, this is, again, one of the greatest basketball players of all time, one of the greatest scorers this game has ever seen. So, yeah, if the Boston Celtics get him, that would be very scary. I'll say this, though. I felt like, as you mentioned here, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And then, like, the headline was really grabby, and it was at 3 o'clock in the morning. But then when you read the substance, it kind of sounds like, all right, but a trade's kind of nowhere near happening.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
So
yeah.
it was kind of weird to me that, like, it was this big deal. And I get it. Like, the internet freaked out about it. And certainly it's worth noting that the Celtics are a suitor. But it still does not feel imminent or even close to me that KD's not going to be a net, or that Kyrie's not going to be a net. And we saw that report from Shams as well. I think he was on Pat McAfee's show and said, like, yeah, like, Kyrie's basically committed to playing for the Nets. So it's like, you look at either the Nets or the field. And I think if you're a betting person, you take the Nets, that they're both going to be back, because at this point it's July 25th. If they haven't had their socks blown off by any of the teams that are pursuing KD, whether it's Phoenix, whether it's Miami, whether it's Boston, whether it's Toronto, if they haven't had a deal that has blown their socks off yet, I'm not sure they're going to get it between now and an opening night. I'm not sure it's going to happen. So yeah, of course, if the Boston Celtics get Kevin Durant, they are, like, they're already a really scary team and a force to be reckoned with. If they get a Kevin Durant, that makes them that much more formidable. Same goes for the Miami Heat or the Toronto Raptors, if either of those teams can swing a deal. But to me, I'm more scared that the Brooklyn Nets just offer more competition, because if they get Kyrie and KD back, that's a very dangerous basketball team. If Ben Simmons plays basketball and some other things bounce their way, that has a potential to be a really good, really tough team.
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting part. And as you mentioned, you know, with the Brooklyn Nets, and we're going to have Adam Taylor on the podcast after the break of Celtics blog, so we'll do a little bit of a deeper dive on the KD for Jaylen Brown stuff. But you mentioned that too, like, Kyrie Irving, now we're hearing reports he's going to stay in Brooklyn at least for next season. I believe it's about $36.5 million for his player option, which he already took. So he has 1 year left on a deal before potentially hitting unrestricted free agency. So you're going to, again, like you said, maybe the Nets are stacked again with those three as their best three guys, with KD, Kyrie Irving, and Ben Simmons coming back. But when you look at this whole merry-go-round that we've been through this offseason, Paul, and looking specifically at the Atlantic Division, right? Look at the way the things have went here, right? We saw Al Horford and movie earlier on between the Celtics and the Sixers. We've seen obviously Kyrie going from the Celtics to the Nets, Kevin Durant now potentially going from the Nets to Celtics. Like, when you're looking at this from a Philly perspective, what do you think the best case scenario is to play out in terms of the player movement aspect before we get into October when the season starts?
I mean, probably KD getting traded to the Phoenix Suns would be great. And a Kyrie going to the Lakers. Sure. That would be great. Cause then it's the opposite. It's not only is it one less team where the Nets won't be nearly as competitive, but neither of those guys are going to go to a team that could potentially be your competition. So you're basically dealing with all these teams as is. I mean, like, think about it. The Toronto Raptors get KD, no matter what they give up, that changes everything about them. That makes them infinitely more dangerous and way, way better. It makes them a legitimate contender to come out of the Eastern Conference. KD is that good that he can shift the entire discussion. If the Heat somehow put together a package, like, that makes the Heat, to me, the favorites with him and Jimmy Butler. That's a really tough squad. So, yeah, I mean, KD just completely changes the calculus of the entire Eastern Conference if he gets moved. So if he goes out west, that to me, and then again, and Kyrie gets traded to the Lakers, that sounds great. That sounds great to me if you're the 76ers. Let them go out west. Let them beat each other up out there. And, you know, and let the East play out as it is right now.
What about the Celtics? Paul, do you think they're better off making that deal? Like, I mean, I love Jaylen Brown. He's only 25 years old. Obviously had a very good finals with Tatum, dealing with some injury stuff there. But looking at that, like, if you get KD, yeah, he's got 4 years left on his deal. Still probably going to be very good for at least two, maybe three of those years. And then year four, it's just depending on how he ages. I still think he's going to be an all-star level guy. But when you look at that from a Celtics standpoint, would you be hesitant at all to give up Jaylen Brown and, let's say, Marcus Smart? Obviously, you're going to have to give up a boatload of first rounders and some pick swaps as well. Or is that something that you're like, hey, man, if we get a chance to get that guy, we're going for it?
Yeah, I think if you have a chance to get Kevin Durant, you got to go get Kevin Durant. And that's I am such a huge Jaylen Brown fan. Like, I loved him coming out. Like, a lot of people were kind of like unsure about him. I specifically know someone I used to work with who was a very big Celtics fan who was so disappointed when they drafted Jaylen Brown. And I loved him. I thought the shot was going to come around. I just saw it. You know, whatever it is, I saw it in him. And I think he's a hell of a player. I think he's still ascending. He's what, 25? So, I mean, he's still on the way up. And if there was an opportunity for the 76ers to get a player like that, I know when Ben Simmons rumors were dangling around and there was like a whisper of the Celtics, I would have been all about getting Jaylen Brown here to help this team out. But yeah, when you have, and don't get me, when you add Marcus Smart to that in picks, it gets dicier. It makes me, I still probably would do it, but it's a huge, huge, huge risk. But I think in a deal like that, you're going to have to take a huge risk. Whatever team lands KD is going to have to give up something they don't want to give up, right? Like, that's the way these things work. If you want to get one of the greatest transcendent players to ever play the game of basketball, you're going to have to give, it's going to hurt you a little bit in other regards. Like, you're going to have to give up something you don't want to give up. But I think too, the interesting thing you mentioned about his game, and like, for me, you know, I was born in 1985. So most of the Michael Jordan I saw was kind of the tail end, and he became like this mid-range post player where he just was automatic from the mid-range. He just made fadeaway after fadeaway. Like, KD can be that. He could be that into like until he's 37 years old. Like, he could definitely, for the rest of his contract, be a really, 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 like, clear, like you said, maybe elite for the next 2 years, and then a very good all-star level for the next couple of years, forever, however long he decides to play. So I think his game has the potential to age very, very well. But yeah, if you're the Boston Celtics and it's out there, you have to almost do anything to get him on your team.
I'm with you too, because you're putting your chips in the middle at this point. I think the Celtics, as constructed, and again, this could change between now and October, I think the Celtics are obviously still a legitimate contender. They got to the finals last season, and without making any changes, and you look at the fact that they added Malcolm Brogdon. That's what I was going to say. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon, you got Danilo Gallinari. They're going to be a deeper team this season. So I think it's something that, yeah, you get a chance to get a guy who's, and this is not like you're getting Michael Jordan on the Wizards, you know what I mean? That you're going all in for that. You're still getting a guy who has the ability and definitely has the game that's going to age well and just be dominant for, like I said, at least two more years. Could very well be 4 years.
Someone pointed out that Michael Jordan led the Wizards to more wins with like Kwame Brown as a starting center than LeBron led the Lakers to last year.
No, that's true. There you go.
That's
that's actually
something to point out.
That's going to be an age old debate that we're never going to get rid of, right? The Michael Jordan LeBron thing. Because
I'm out on it.
It's funny because even the on that, you know what? Now that we're here, I will say this. To me, I think LeBron is obviously one of the best of all time. Maybe the second best that I've seen in my generation, because I was born in 83, so I got to see Jordan as well, like you know, as a teenager. And I look back at it, it wasn't that I think Michael Jordan is like the best like all around player in terms of assists and rebounding and whatever. But to me, it was just the dominance, right? You just knew he was going to win. And I remember being that age too. Like, it was like, well, I know the Bulls are going to win it. It's just a matter of time. And I don't think I've ever felt that with LeBron, where it's like his team could lose, you know what I mean? And we've seen him lose multiple times in the finals. Whereas with Jordan, it was like, yo, this guy's just going to find a way to get it done. So I'm not going to argue about who's a better player overall. I'm just saying, if I had a choice between the two, for me, it would be Michael Jordan.
Yeah. So I don't know when I started to do this. Maybe it was a couple of years ago. I now abstain from all GOAT conversations. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's just a waste of time. I think eras are so different, as Draymond Green astutely pointed out. Like, LeBron James is the greatest player of his era. There's no debating it. He is. He's the greatest player of his era. Michael Jordan was the greatest player of his era. And you can go back, like, Wilt Chamberlain was, you know, someone could throw Bill Russell out there Oh, well, Bill Russell won the rings. Well, guess what? Wilt Chamberlain, I'm sorry, look at the friggin' numbers. It was ridiculous. Wilt Chamberlain was the greatest basketball player of his era. You know, and in the 80s, you could debate, was it Magic, was it Bird? One of those guys was the greatest. Kareem, the greatest of the 70s. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, to me, that's the way I more look at it now. I can't look at it and compare eras. I look at it as LeBron definitively is the greatest player of his era. Michael Jordan definitively the greatest player of his. It's a cop-out. I don't care. That's just where I am.
Yeah, I'm with you too, because I don't think there's a GOAT debate. Again, I'm just saying, who would I take if you're asking my opinion? It would be Michael Jordan. You know what I mean? And you can
I get that.
And people can sit here and tell me Kareem is the best player of all time. People can tell me that LeBron is the best player of all time, and I'm willing to listen to him. You know what I mean? I'm not going to sit here and debate that. Let's wrap up on this. Another rival of the Sixers, Paul, heavily involved in the rumor mill as of the last, maybe 2 or 3 weeks here, is the Knicks and Donovan Mitchell. Don't know what they'd have to give up, although you imagine Danny Ainge is salivating at how many picks he'd be able to take off Leon Rose and the Knickerbockers. But when you're looking at it from your perspective, if Donovan Mitchell ends up in the division, which damn would be friggin' crazy, because he is still very good. He's only 25. You're going to have, like we mentioned, Tatum, potentially Brown. If KD ends up with the sell, whatever happens there with the Nets, you're going to have KD, Kyrie, Ben Simmons, obviously Joel Embiid, James Harden, Donovan Mitchell now potentially in that division, the Raptors coming up, Scottie Barnes. When you look at that deal for the Knicks, and if New York is able to get Donovan Mitchell, does that move the needle for them at all, in your opinion? Do you think that the Knicks end up being this team that not going to challenge for a championship? I think anybody would be ridiculous in saying that right now. But if you look at what they could bring in terms of being a playoff team, do you like that deal for the Knicks at this point?
Well, I think if you're in the Knicks, you got to do it. I think this is your best chance to land a guy like this. He clearly wants to be, like, he's a New York guy, wants to be in New York. So I think if you're Leon Rose, you got to take the swing. I think, I wouldn't say you have to make the trade, but like you have to damn sure try, because this is an all-star player who's under contract, who you have the resources to go get. You pair him and Jalen Brunson together, it's a little bit of a small backcourt, but it's a very good backcourt, and it makes them interesting. I don't think it makes them in the mix for like a 5-6 seed, kind of the second tier. Like, if
play-in team for sure, though, right? You think
A play in the Eastern Conference, easily. I think depending on what happens with the Nets, you know, they could be a 5 or a 6. Like, it could definitely happen that way. Depending on what happens with the Hawks, I don't know how that's going to go with Young and Murray. We'll see how that kind of all plays out, if John Collins is still there, yada, yada, you know, down the road. But yeah, I mean, it clearly would make them a much, much better team. This year would not make them a title contender remotely. Now, maybe in the future, you dump Julius Randle's contract, you do some other things, you make some room. Maybe you can get a big name guy in there to go along with Mitchell and Brunson. Maybe that could catapult them. You know, maybe they get like a really good all-star wing or an all-star big or something like that. Maybe that could catapult them into the conversation. I will say this though, if that scenario happens and then KD and Kyrie stay with the Nets, the power balance of East and West, man, which is already starting to teeter a little bit, like the, you have LeBron, who's what, 38, 37, 37, yeah. right? He's my yeah. age, I think. 37, Chris Paul, who's like 38. Like all the West guard is getting older. I mean, you know, you got Luka obviously and Devin Booker out there, but the East, man, with Giannis, Giannis and Middleton, with the Celtics, with Tatum and Brown, the Sixers with Embiid and Maxey. I mean, it's the Heat, I guess, are a little bit older with Jimmy, but they have Bam Adebayo. Like, there's a lot of good young talent in the East. And the power shift is kind of happening if Donovan Mitchell gets traded to the Eastern Conference.
Oh, for sure. And I think the Cavs are coming up, too. I think a couple of years
away. Darius Garland's an all-star player. I love Mobley. I think Mobley's going to be an all-star for a long time in this league, too.
No, same here. I think he's awesome as well. And I think they're on the come up, too. So you're right. And you know what? As much as they've been terrible for, you know, the last 15 years or whatever it is, 10 years since that little golden age that they had, I think the Pistons are doing pretty good things in Detroit there as well. So I think they're building
like that
a good
core.
Foundation.
Yeah. No, the trio of Cade with Ivy and Durin. I mean, that's a really, it reminds me a little bit of like Process Sixers, like when they tried to do, I mean, it didn't work out very well for the Sixers, obviously. I mean, it worked out pretty good, but you know, when they had Embiid, they had Simmons, and they get Fultz, and that was kind of like, all right, this is our trio for the future. The Sixers got a 3 seed when Ben Simmons was a rookie. So, I mean, hey, and Markel Fultz was a rookie. So that worked out pretty well for them. So yeah, who knows? You put three guys who are really young, really exciting, and have the potential to be very good. And yeah, in the not too distant future, that could be a really competitive, really good basketball team.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's going to be fun to see what shakes out in the East over the next few seasons. And like you mentioned, we see the Bulls get a little bit better, although I don't think they're there. Atlanta obviously going all in with DeJounte Murray and Trae Young there too. So they're
I keep forgetting about the Bulls. Yeah, I mean, the Bulls are in that mix too. But yeah, I don't see them cracking the top four this year. Like I think they're like 5-6. Like that's to me, that's like the most interesting thing in the East. I think the top four teams are going to be the top four teams, with the Knicks or the Nets being kind of that the wild card.
Yeah.
5 through 10, though, is going to be really, really interesting and really, really competitive.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see. But again, there's so much left to happen in terms of player movement with KD. We don't know what the hell is going to happen with Kyrie Irving. If the Nets do move on from KD, maybe it's Jaylen Brown ended up in Boston. Maybe it's a package around, you know, Tyler Hero, Bam, like who knows what is going to happen. But hey, the good part is it's still giving us something to talk about in the dog days of summer, right, Paul? This is the NBA offseason and it's still giving us a
off to cover.
No, yeah, well, it's good for us. It's good for us. Like I said, from a business standpoint, but let's wrap things up there. Paul, I want to thank you as always for joining me. I'm sure we'll do this again on the next couple of weeks here as well and try and get some rest. Maybe give your hair a little bit of a wash, let it flow a little bit. We know it looks good, right?
I take care of it. You know that I maintain
it.
You
do a good job with it. You do a good job with it. So take care of it. And we'll catch up again soon. All right. That's Paul Hudrick. You can catch him. Obviously he's their lead producer for us at Liberty Ballers. Coming up after a short break here, I'll be joined by Adam Taylor of Celtics Blog. Going to do a little bit of a deeper dive from a Boston perspective of a potential KD for Jaylen Brown swap. So that's coming up in about a minute.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, and we are back. Time to do a little bit of a deep dive. We saw the news break late last night, early this morning, depending on where you are. I'm going to introduce the guy who's going to be joining me and tell you his story about when he saw the tweet notification from Woj. Kevin Durant, the Boston Celtics. Now some reports that they might be offering up Jaylen Brown in order to bring him there. To break that down with me, good friend of the podcast. He also writes for SB Nation sister site, Celtics blog, Mr. Adam Taylor. Adam, you're, for the people who don't know, you actually live in England. So walk us through when you saw the tweet notification from Woj letting us know that, damn, the Boston Celtics are involved in trying to get Kevin Durant into a Celtics uniform.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for having me, man. It's a pleasure. It was about 7:30 a.m. I just dropped the wife to work. I was just getting home, opened the front door, and then I get a tweet notification on my phone, which is weird because obviously everyone in America is asleep, so nobody really tweets at me in the morning. So I check the notification, it's Woj, and then all of a sudden, you know, when you kind of have that freeze frame moment where it's like, you're still half asleep because you've not long woke up and you're like, making sure the wording's correct. So it's not the Celtics have traded for Kevin Durant. It's the Celtics are considering trading for Kevin Durant. And then it's just been a wild day ever since. Celtics Twitter and the wider Celtics fan base seem very split down the middle on this.
Yeah, and I want to ask you that too, because obviously coming off that finals loss and, you know, we saw how good the Celtics were over the last, you know, 3 or 4 months of the regular season. We're sitting not very pretty in December, and then obviously went on that torrid pace to kind of get to the top half of the conference, and clearly were dominant in the playoffs until they ended up coming up short in the finals. So you look at Jaylen Brown, right? One of those guys that was originally selected by the Celtics through one of the picks that they got from Brooklyn after the horrible Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce trade when they were way past the prime that Brooklyn took a chance on them. And then they get Jaylen Brown, and he's a homegrown guy for you alongside Jason Tatum. You look at the job that he's done over his 6 seasons in the league, averaged 23.6 points last year. Why do you think there's such a divide among Celtics fan? Because even reading the website this morning, the Celtics blog, I'm seeing that too in the comment section, that people are kind of like, hey man, Jaylen's our guy, and you're going to bring in Kevin Durant, 33 years old, obviously has had some injury issues the past couple of seasons. But when you look at why that would be so divisive for the fan base, do you think it's because of what Jaylen Brown means to the organization in terms of being a homegrown guy? Or is it because of maybe something that it's like, let's stay away from Kevin Durant?
So the main kind of rebuttal that I've seen is very much based on longevity. There's a lot of concern around Durant turning 34 this season, a contract running till 37, where he's going to be earning over $50 million. And everybody's looking at Jaylen Brown like, hey, this dude was the guy in the NBA Finals for us. Jason Tatum struggled a little bit. He had that shoulder injury. And Jaylen Brown really put the team on his back for stretches. And I think there's some belief there that Brown will never be the player that Kevin Durant is. He will never be that like first ballot Hall of Fame, one of the greatest of all time type guys. But in 3 years' time, he's probably far more valuable than what Durant is in 3 years' time. You've got the wing defense, you've got the athleticism, the mid-range shooting, the ability to pressure the rim. And everybody in Boston is so invested in watching Brown and Tatum work out because there's been so much narrative that they just can't figure it out together. I think that's a huge part for Boston fans is very much, we know Durant is the better player. We know that he's always going to be Durant's prime is always going to be far and above Brown's prime, but Brown is not even in his prime yet. And Durant's already on the decline from his. And I think that's where a lot of the concern is. Like if you can convince Jaylen Brown to re-sign, he's got 2 years left on his current deal. If you can convince him to re-sign in Boston long-term, while your championship window is anywhere between 5 and 9 years with Kevin Durant, it's a clear cut 2, maybe 3 years if you're lucky. So that longevity is a huge sticking point for a large portion of the fan base.
Yeah, and you mentioned that he's got 2 years left on his deal. He's due 26.7 roughly next season, 28.5 for 23-24. But looking at this from your perspective, Adam, where do you stand on this personally? Like, obviously covering the team, you do a great job, like I mentioned, for Celtics blog. Where do you sit in terms of looking at this as a potential trade? And if you were Brad Stevens right now, which way would you be trying to lean to get this done?
So I am torn. I've tweeted that today. I am quite torn. But in my head, you have to take, if you've got a chance of pairing Tatum and Durant together and the cost is acceptable, then you have to be willing to take that deal. Because at the end of the day, 2 years or 3 years of borderline prime Kevin Durant is more than you're going to get in the next 2 to 3 years from Jaylen Brown. So I'm on board with the idea. Plus, I like the notion of, and I wrote about this today, it's everyone was very big on how Al Horford's presence helped improve Robert Williams and Grant Williams this season, you know, from getting to watch his pregame rituals, the way he takes care of the body, the way he approaches his training regimes. Durant being that guy for Tatum could be the perfect way to kind of let Tatum take a step back, continue to develop and flourish. And then as Durant starts to decline in years 3 and 4 of that deal, that's when Tatum can really become that superstar. So I'm on board with making the trade, assuming that the deal is fair. Like at the moment, you know, a lot of people have seen Marcus Smart as the sticking point.
Mm-hmm.
But during the playoffs, Ime Udoka was on record saying he doesn't believe the perimeter defense takes too much of a hit when Marcus Smart's off the floor because Derek White's there to kind of help things tick along. The only thing you lose is that versatility to have a genuine switchable point guard that can go 1 through 5. Obviously, you don't want him on a big man, but he's capable of doing so. So I think Marcus Smart's a sticking point there. But as long as you're not throwing the farm and the depth is still there, I'd be willing to make that deal.
Yeah, that's where, and like you said, you wrote about that, like how KD can help unlock another stratosphere for Jason Tatum to get into. But looking at this in terms of from a perspective of around the Eastern Conference, right? These teams now all division rivals, right? Brooklyn, the Celtics, I cover the Sixers, so the Sixers in there, obviously. And you're looking at this kind of merry-go-round of players and people getting moved along. Well, when you're thinking about this, again, from just a basketball perspective, let's say that they do make the deal. Let's say it's Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, 3 picks and a couple of pick swaps. The Celtics get Kevin Durant. Does that still keep the Celtics at the top of the conference? Do you think they drop down maybe towards behind Milwaukee? Because I would look at the East right now and go Boston, Milwaukee as constructed are the top two teams. Then I think a little tier below that, you got Philly and Miami, and we'll wait to see. I mean, again, Brooklyn's whole thing, we'll wait to see what happens. But let's say they do get Kevin Durant. Do you think that makes the Celtics the odds-on favorite, considering what they added this offseason as well with Malcolm Brogdon, Danilo Gallinari? Like, where do you think that moves the needle for the Celtics?
On paper, I think they stay number one in that conference. I'm not sure. Obviously, we need to see in actuality before we can be sure, because, you know, Milwaukee, a no joke, Philadelphia have improved their roster quite drastically in terms of, you know, I was a big fan of that DeAnthony Melton pickup.
Yeah.
So and then obviously PJ Tucker and so forth. So the Sixers aren't going to be a joke. Brooklyn, you can understand if Kyrie goes and they're left with Jaylen Brown and Ben Simmons, that's going to take a year or two to build around them and figure that out. I think that Boston are still considered the favorites, but in actuality, there's going to be a big learning curve. Can KD and Tatum play together? This isn't Team USA. Is Tatum willing to take that step back and become like step into Jaylen Brown's role? Is Durant willing to defer the ball sometimes? There's going to be a lot of learning and a lot of accepting new roles, which could mean that we see another season like we saw this season from Boston, where it's a little bit choppy to begin with, and then they figure it out around about that February time, and then we see them start to grow. But I'd say that in my head, I still think that Milwaukee are probably the biggest threats. And I'm coming into this season, I always like to be the realist. So I'm coming into this season expecting Milwaukee to be the favorites, just because, you know, Giannis and Chris Middleton, they're no joke. And Giannis managed to run Boston deep into that series without Middleton. So I'd still expect Milwaukee to be number one.
When you look at the personal damage this could do, Adam, in terms of with Jaylen Brown, obviously we saw him tweet this morning saying SMH, like, you know what I mean? Or trying to figure out what the, like, you know, what the hell do all these rumors mean? When you look at this personally, like, does this, let's just say the trade doesn't go through, right? Or the Celtics don't get Kevin Durant. Now that we know it's been public that the Celtics have made an offer, the Celtics have, and nobody's again confirmed or denied this, but they've looked at this and said, hey, okay, you know, we might be willing to part with one of our two best players in order to get KD, one of the top 10 players of all time, depending on where you rank him. Do you think that affects the relationship with Jaylen Brown in terms of, okay, what if his contract comes up in 2 years? We know that it's going to, there's no extension. Does this mean that his relationship with the Celtics is fractured going forward?
I mean, that's a huge concern, right? Like, so we're a day away from being a month removed from where Jaylen Brown liked to tweet from a Celtics fan saying that he was very under, what was the word he used? Disrespected in Boston. Mm-hmm. So the tweet just read, Celtics fans disrespect, Jaylen Brown is disrespected by Celtics fans or something along those lines. And Jaylen Brown sent Celtics Twitter into meltdown by liking that tweet. That was on the 26th of June. We're on the 25th of July. So just a day away from being a month. And now his name's in these trade rumors. And it's not the first time. You know, he was the primary guy being floated around in Anthony Davis trade rumors. The same when it came to Kawhi Leonard. The same with Bradley Beal. The same, if I remember correctly. No, I don't think it was with Paul George, but with Bradley Beal. And then you can do it again now with Kevin Durant. Whenever a superstar becomes available, the Celtics are sending a message, whether they mean to or not, that Jaylen Brown is expendable for the right guy. And in my eyes, eventually, maybe once or twice, you can brush that off, but eventually you're going to start feeling a type of way about that. So there is definitely a risk that Jaylen Brown gets to the end of this deal, hits free agency, and starts looking somewhere else for a fresh start, and probably wants to be the guy on a team. And if he gets an offer to go and be the number one option on a rebuilding team or a team that feel he's the missing piece to them being a contender, I could genuinely see him making that move.
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting part now, right? Now that this has become public, and I wonder who told Woj last night that this is a thing, you know what I mean? Because under Brad Stevens, things have been pretty tight-lipped from the Celtics organization in terms of not bringing out a bunch of rumors or reports. And so I think that is going to be another little side angle to look at from this, right? Like we said, like, how does that affect Jaylen Brown's relationship with the organization if they don't land Kevin Durant? So, I mean, I think there's so much at stake here, and the NBA has been ridiculously crazy. We're supposed to be right now in July, Adam's struggling for content ideas, but thank you for the NBA gods for giving us all of these rumors. We'll wrap up after a couple more questions, Adam. Just want to ask you this too. Looking around the Eastern Conference, you mentioned the Sixers. I love the moves that they have made, right? They looked like a team that was, yeah, maybe a top four or five team in the East, but we saw their shortcomings against Miami, although, you know, let's not forget Joel Embiid was hurt for the first two games of that series. Still, I think that Miami was clearly the better squad in terms of its roster, in terms of its depth. And now we've seen the Sixers add, as you mentioned, PJ Tucker, DeAnthony Melton. They've also added Daniel House in free agency. So looking at where your thoughts are on the Sixers coming from a Celtics perspective, how far off do you think the Sixers are behind Boston in terms of the Eastern Conference pecking order? And do you take the Sixers serious as a potential NBA Finals threat?
I think Joel Embiid's an MVP caliber guy. So I think when you look at it from, it's Embiid and Harden are the two stars, Tatum and Brown are the two stars. So there's no third guy in either rotation. Now, some people might like to point at Tobias Harris as that guy, but for me, he just hasn't been a success in Philadelphia, like, overall. So I wouldn't see him as the third guy in terms of, like, the third star. The depth that PJ Tucker brings along with Melton, along with House, I don't think they're that far away. I think that they're going to play a very physical brand of basketball that's going to be perfectly suited to Embiid. I think Embiid's versatility is going to give defenses nightmares the way it always does. I could see them being a surprise team. I think that people are sleeping on them a little bit because of how they looked during that series against Miami, because they just didn't seem to be able to figure out the Harden and Embiid pairing. But that's the problem, right? Everyone's after these instant success stories. And in truth, it takes a while to figure these things out, where you need your guys, where you want your shooters situated, if you want guys lifting out of the corner when Harden drives. There's all these, like, nuances that you need to see what works and what doesn't. And the only way you can figure that out is through game reps. I think the Sixers are going to be a completely different animal by the time we get to the playoffs next season.
Yeah, I think so too. And like I said, I think a lot of people are excited by the moves that were made by Philly to bring in that depth and Daryl Morey. They still have room. And as much as people have hated on James Harden and like you mentioned, trying to figure out that pairing, he does look a lot better in terms of in shape right now. I saw some pictures come out over the past week or so, just seeing his body, it looks a lot better. And also looking at the fact that he did take that $15 million pay cut, roughly $15 million, allows a team, they're still about $3.5 million below the apron, which obviously they can't go over at any point, but still this is going to be an exciting season yet again. So I will wrap up on this, Adam. You know, we talked about the Sixers, now we talked about the Celtics, obviously the Bucks, we've mentioned Miami, but looking around the league as a whole, I think the last couple of years have been really fun for the sense that we have no clue who's going to win the NBA championship, right? Whereas in the previous decade, you had, okay, we knew once LeBron and D-Wade and Chris Bosh teamed up in Miami, it was kind of like, well, the Heat are likely going to be in the finals, right? They ended up making it there 4 straight years. Then we had the Warriors dynasty where we knew they were going to be there. LeBron, Kyrie the first couple times, and then we're like, okay, that is going to be the Eastern Conference champion. Now we're looking at this, the field is wide open. So I know this is going to be tough for you to answer, Adam, because I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. When you look at your top five teams in the NBA right now, you don't have to put them in any order, but who are the best five squads right now, you think, in the league going into next season?
That is putting me on the spot. I'm going to throw a sleeper in there, and I don't think it's ever going to come to fruition, but it's a team that I'd like to see come to fruition because I followed them for a few years and I've kind of seen them struggle. So I'm going to throw a sleeper in there just out of kind of like wishful thinking. But we'll go with Golden State, Boston, Milwaukee. Memphis is my sleeper team.
Okay.
And then I'm trying to think of another Western Conference team that I think is genuinely seen out here. This time last year, I would have thrown Utah in there, but I'm going to go with Phoenix.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I like that. You know what? I think Memphis is going to take another step in its development too, and I think that's going to be key. Ja Morant continues to improve. Obviously, they got guys like Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr. when he's back from injury. So I'm with you. I think the Grizzlies are going to move up. But like I said, I think that next tier now too, like we've mentioned, you got Philly, you got Miami, you're going to have these other squads. And who knows what happens with Brooklyn, because now we're hearing that Kyrie Irving is dedicated to at least playing there next season for sure with his 1-year option. And then we'll figure it out. So again, there's still a ton of drama left. We're still, you know, basically 2 months away from training camp. But I mean, hey, the fun part is we're going to be able to talk about this stuff. So Adam, I messaged you this morning. I know it was on short notice. I want to appreciate you taking the time out to hop on with me to talk this Kevin Durant Celtics rumor. And if the trade does happen, love to have you on again to kind of get your thoughts on everything if it does become official.
Of course, man. It's my pleasure. I really appreciate you taking the time to reach out, and I've had a great time. Thank you very much, man.
No worries. Anytime. That's Adam Taylor. He covers the Celtics for our SB Nation sister site, Celtics Blog. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam Taylor NBA. Again, lots left to unpack, lots left to uncover as we go through what is supposed to be the dog days of the NBA offseason. We're going to have you covered here at the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. Don't forget, give us a subscription, whether that's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your fix. Always appreciate a 5-star review as well. And don't forget, we're going to have you covered for all things Philly and around the NBA at libertyballers.com.